Hey, good morning, everybody. We are on Sefes Brachos, Daf Nun Aleph. We're starting on Daf Nun Amid Beis, a few lines up. Appreciate the sponsorship of OMO Construction and the Bouncers, as well as Bagel Munch for providing the breakfast every week. So we are on Nun Amid Beis, five lines or six lines up from the bottom. Two dots. Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda, the Amora says that Shachach. What happens if the person forgot and put food into his mouth below bracha without saying a bracha rishona. So what do you do about that situation? Happens occasionally. So here's what it says. Misalkon mivareich. He presents one solution, which is just push the food into your cheek and then say the bracha and then continue eating. Now the Gemara kind of revises that. It says, well, really there are three Brysos that give three different strategies. Tanya Chada Bolaan. One Brysos says that in that situation you swallow and then you say the bracha and then you continue eating. The Tanya Irach Poltan. And another Brysos says you actually have to remove the food out of your mouth and then say the bracha and then, you know, put it back in your mouth. The Tanya Irach Misalka. And there's another Brysos, this is what Rabbi Yehuda said, which was that you push the food into your cheek, into the side of your mouth, and say the bracha and resume. So what do you do? Is it a machlokas? Gemara says no. Lo kashya. These are not contradictory rulings. They just refer to three different scenarios. Ha, desanya, bolan, bimashkin. When it tells you that if you have the food in your mouth, you can just swallow and then say the bracha, that's like the most lenient view. But what it's saying is that we're talking about it wasn't food, it was a drink. So you had a drink in your mouth. So we're not going to make you spit out the drink. That apparently is like a violation of Kavod HaBrios. So for Kavod HaBrios purposes, we're going to let you swallow that food and then say the bracha. And it's apparently not, you know, reasonable to take the mashkim and to push it into the side of your mouth, into your cheek and talk. So you wouldn't want to do that. So you have no choice. You have to swallow. The Hadisanya Poltan, and the ruling where it said, the Brisa said that you have to take the food out of your mouth, that's obviously solid food, but it's saying, midi dilo mamis. It's something that wouldn't be repulsive to do such a thing. Like, I don't know, like you didn't even start chewing it, or you still had the fork on it, or it was some kind of a thing that's easy to, you know, to kind of take the food out of your mouth, say the bracha, pop it back in. So that's obviously what you would have assumed is the preferred method, but it's not always feasible or reasonable when it comes to food. And when it says that you put the food into the side of your mouth, into your cheek, and say the bracha, that's if it's midi demamis. That's if it's something that would be gross to take it out of your mouth. It's like already chewed up. So then you just push it onto the side of your mouth. The Gemara asks on that, Nun Aleph Amid Aleph now. Well, if that's a strategy, if you're going to let me push the food to the side of my mouth, my cheek, and say the bracha, so then why can't we use that strategy even for a food that you could easily take out of your mouth? In other words, why is it preferred to take the food out of your mouth if you could just push the food into the side of your mouth and say the bracha? The whole concept of pushing the food into the side of your mouth presumably relates to the fact that chewing does not require a bracha. The only bracha is if you're going to eat and swallow. So while it's in your mouth, doesn't necessarily yet require a bracha. So if I can push the food to the side of my mouth, so then I'm not eating. So I should be able to say the bracha.
David, I was just going to ask you on that. Like for the east side, you're still gaining some taste, some benefit.
Yeah, they don't seem to care. And don't ask me about gum. Okay. So I hear the kasha. So it says that why should we insist the person take the food out of your mouth if it's something that you can easily remove from your mouth without it being too gross? The Gemara answers: Tiri Gemara Rabbi Yitzchak Kaskasa Kamei the Rabbi Yosi Bar Avin Mishmei the Rabbi Yochanan. These Amoraim quoting Rabbi Yochanan all said Mishum Shenemar Yimalei Pi Tilasecha, because the pasuk describes that you should have your mouth full of Tehillos Hashem. Your mouth should be full of Tehillos Hashem. In other words, you always have to have an empty mouth whenever you say a bracha. That's what this rule is saying. This rule is saying you should always have an empty mouth. You have nothing in your mouth when you're saying a bracha. That's a kind of important principle, which means that if you have the option, take the food out of your mouth, say the bracha, and then put it back in. It's only if that's not really an option, such as the food is gross and it's a covered abrius violation to do that. So then you could either push it to the side of your mouth, which would compromise this priority of yamalipiti lasecha. And swallowing it is like a last resort. That's when you have no other option. The poskim talk about this regarding everything else. Like in general, this is now an official policy of when you're saying brachos, other things, tefilos, nothing in your mouth. So that also means that let's say you're eating one food and then you have a different food that needs a bracha. And it's not about any mistakes or any errors or anything went wrong. It says that how do you say a bracha of multiple foods? So you have to have nothing in your mouth when you say that other bracha in that second food. Poskim have kind of an interesting discussion about if you have dentures, which are in your mouth, things that are in your mouth that aren't attached to your mouth. So the poskim seem to say that the basis of this rule, yamalipiti lasech, even though it's not given over here, seems to be something about how anything that's in your mouth is going to impair proper articulation or enunciation of the words. So if you have the dentures, that improves, that facilitates the proper enunciation. So of course that'll be something you need to have in your mouth. Okay. In any case, bo minei meirav chista, misha achal v'shasa v'lo bireich, mahu sheyachzor v'yivareich. So what's the din? Rav Chista was asked the following question. Relates a little to what we were saying. What happens if you ate some food, or you ate all of your food, and you didn't say a bracha? Now it occurs to you, wait, I forgot to say a bracha rishona. So now what do I do? Do I say a bracha now, the bracha rishona now, after eating? So Amar Lahu, Sir Rav Chista said back to him, what's the svara here? Misha achal shum v'recho nodef. Person who ate garlic and his breath smells. How's he going to address the problem? Yachzor v'yochal shum acher, kadei she'recho nodef. What is he supposed to do to remedy the problem? You want him to eat more shum? Is that going to remedy the problem? So what exactly did he answer? So he answered, presumably, that, well, what do you want him to do? His crime was not saying a bracha. So you want him to remedy the problem by not saying a bracha? So, of course, you need to say a bracha. So I'm a Ravina. Ravina said, Hilkach. So Ravina now infers that even would imply that even after finishing eating and I have nothing else to eat, I now say a bracha rishona if I did not say the bracha rishona before eating. This, Anya, and he has a proof from a brisa and a related matter, like it says in the brisa, Taval ve'ala. When the person goes to the mikveh and comes out of the mikveh, Omer, if it's a situation where you're saying a bracha over the tefillah, then you come out of the mikveh and you say the bracha, Omer b'yal yeso, the bracha asher ketchana b'mitzvah sav, v'tzivana v'ala tefillah. There's a brisa in that sugya and psachim about all the brachos, the brichsa mitzvah. So it says here you're saying the bracha after doing the mitzvah. And you see that even though normally... See, the logic of this argument is that just like before we eat, you have a bracha rishona. Before you do mitzvot, you also have a bracha rishona. And presumably, the same rules would apply. So if you're going to say a bracha, birchza mitzvah, after you do the mitzvah, presumably that also means that if necessary, you could say a bracha rishona after you've eaten the food. The Gemara says, velohi, but that is not a proof. Sometimes when the Gemara does a velohi, it may be, it's a very late rule, it's a very late comment, meaning it's like a summary statement of the Gemara, so it might even be from Gaonim. Anyway, the Gemara says, Lohi, we don't follow this analysis. Hasa meikara gavra lochazi, hacha meikara gavra chazi, v'hol vidchi idachi. Gemara says that it's not the same case. When you're in a mikveh situation, you can't say the bracha before you go to the mikveh. So that activates a whole discussion of Rishonim here, why not? What are we talking about anyway? Who's stopping you from saying a bracha before you go to the mikveh? What is this? So that's a whole discussion anyway, but let's imagine that that's true. So that you were unable to say the bracha before you go into the mikveh. So then you have no choice after a bracha, birchas mitzvah, after you do the mitzvah. And there are any number of cases like that where we have to defer the bracha until after we do the mitzvah. In certain cases, there are common examples, you know, we're all familiar with how this has turned into one, like Netilas Yadayim, we do the bracha afterwards. It's all based on this Gemara over here, and Neiros Shabbos for Ashkenazim, for example, is an example of this kind of a thing. There are a number of other examples of mitzvahs that we do because it's not, we can't really do say the bracha before we do the mitzvah. But ordinarily, we would want that. But when it comes to the food, the person was supposed to say the bracha rishon beforehand, and he just didn't do it. So that's not, so you can't prove from there that even afterwards he would say the bracha. Ha'ol me'ikara gavra chazi, v'ho'ol v'idachi idachi. Since the person could have said the bracha before eating the food, but didn't, so then we would say he lost his chance. It happens to be in Shulchan Aruch an interesting thing. When it comes to the food, that's how we accept. That if you ate the food and you have nothing else to eat, you don't say bracha rishona, you just say the bracha afrona. But when it comes to mitzvos, there's all question. The rishonim are kind of divided on that issue. So the Shulchan Aruch kind of splits between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. The Sephardi policy is what it seems to be saying over here. Let's say the person did not say the bracha mitzvah until finishing a mitzvah. So then the Sephardi policy is, well, you lost your chance, same as food. And the Ashkenazi policy seems to be that we can still say the Birchas HaMitzvah after the mitzvah also. Not identical to the food situation.
Is it surprising that they don't bring in the Kalab Ogre Lefsi Atan?
That's the premise of this.
That is a premise.
So honestly, even though we didn't lay out all of the underlying assumptions that led to the logic of comparing the Birchas HaMitzvah to the Birchas Rishon over food, but it's assumed that you understand that. I think does Rashi make that comment over here? Even though normally, I don't see it. But that's the premise, is that since you have to say the bracha over Liyasiyasan, by not doing so, either you lost your chance altogether, that's what it looks a little bit like from this Gemara, unless it's no option. Yeah. Okay. Okay, in any case, two dots. Tan Rabbanan, asparagus. This asparagus thing is some kind of a drink that's a cross between a morning coffee, a shot of liquor, and a health drink. Well, so this is something that Rashi says they would frequently drink in the morning, and then here's a whole page. We're going to skip most of this. But anyway, Yafel Alev Etov Leinayim, Mekoshin Lebnei Meyayim. It has good health benefits. You should get your morning cup of this asparagus drink. It's good for your eyes and your lave and your insides. And it's overall a good health drink if you drink this regularly, unless you overdo. But you can't overdo it. Don't get drunk from it. Gemara says, well, hold on a minute. How do you pull that off? Mita katana yafel a lave. Any beverage that's going to be good for your lave must be alcoholic. Wait a minute. So then why are we assuming that's going to be good for your digestion? But there's a brisa that talks about the medical benefits of the asparagus drink or alcoholic beverages, really, wine. And it says that it's good for lamedine tests, but it's bad for Reish Mem Tuf. What are those things? Lamed Ayin Tes. So Rashi tells you over here, Lev, Einayim, and Tchol. Okay, so these are your Lev, whatever that is, your Einayim, your eyes, and your Tchol, some internal organ. But that's good for those. But Ramat, but for Reish Mem and Tuf, Kasha. The alcohol is bad for your resh and your mem and your tuf. What's the resh and the mem and the tuf? What's your resh? Rosh? Okay. Good to know. Anyway, so the problem is that you see that's no good. So Gemara answers, we're trying to figure out, you know, what's healthy and not healthy. The Gemara says, Ki tanya hi bim yushan. Well, it depends. We're talking about old wine, new wine. The miyushan, kiddisnan. Like we see evidence of this in a Mishnah in Nedarim, it says, konam yayin shani to'eim. If a person thinking that the wine is harmful, takes a neder to, like, he swears off of wine. Shehayayin kasha levenei mayayin, because it's bad for my digestion. Amrulo. So then somebody informs, so having taken such a neder, the question is it binding? But they told him, Amrulo halo miyushan yafe. But some wines are good if it's miyushan. If it's old wine, it's good. For your insights. So my answer is, so the Mishnah says, so then if the person accepts that qualification of the wine, so then it turns out that he's actually bound only by the kind of wine that he intended to forswear, which was only the unhealthy wine, but he'd be permitted to drink that old wine. Anyway, you're supposed to get out of all of that, that you see that the Tanaim considered old wine to be healthy. For your b'nei mayayin shramina, so that's the chiluk. So if you make your asparagus with the old wine, that's one thing. If it's new wine, it's a different thing. And so, okay, whatever. It's all health advice here. We're going to skip from here, these two dots, way down about 20-something lines to the line, to the two dots, where it says, Amarebi Zera. You're welcome to read all of this if you want to, all of this stuff about the asparagus and the demons and everything, and the if you have any questions about any of that, I got it. Feel free to come to the rabbi and talk to him about it. not me. Two dots. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Okay, so if you have, where are we up to? It's it's far down. In our editions, it's something like seven medium lines up. Nine medium lines up. Two dots. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Amar Rebbe Yavahu, Rebbe Zera, Kotzer Bavo, we Amri Lava Masnisa Tana, maybe it's even a Braisa. Asara Dvar Namra Bekos Shel Bracha. 10 things that they said about the Kos Shel Bracha. The expression Kos Shel Bracha, we use the Kos Shel Bracha as being the Kos that you hold in conjunction with any kind of a Bracha, such as Kiddush and Avdala and Erisin and Nisuin and everything and Brismila. But it's really a technical term that means Birkas HaMazon. It's the Kos Shel Birkas HaMazon, which for them, there used to be a lot more fussy about the Kos Shel Brachas HaMazon at Kedekach, that there's a whole question even in the Gemara whether you can ever bench without a Kos Shel Bracha. Like we would consider Kiddush, obviously, something that you only say ala Kos, but we wouldn't consider benching something you say ala Kos, just that once in a while, you know, you sometimes you'll take a Kos if you have a lot of people or something. But it's there used to be a lot more fussy about benching ala Kos. So we don't even have that. In any case, that's called the Kos Shel Bracha. So it says over here that when you, the Kos Shel Bracha needs 10 things. They say 10 things about it. 10 like requirements, sort of. So here's what it says. Ta'un, and here we go. Hadacha, shtifa, wash it, and wash it. The Gemara's going to explain what the difference is. Chai, it has to be chai, which is a word that means different things in different contexts. So in this case, it means it has to be the raw, undiluted wine. Umale, and full to the top, and itur, and ituf, it has to be surrounded, and it has to be draped. Notlo, b'shtei adav, it's something that you take in two hands, v'nosna b'yamin, but you hold it in your right hand, u'magbiyam in a karka tefach, and you hold it up a tefach from the table or the ground. V'nosan enavbo, and you're supposed to be looking at it, v'yesham rimaf m'shagra b'vmatana la'anshe beso. And some say also, make sure you pass the coast to your wife. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so those are statements from Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Avo, or Rabbi Isa. So Rabbi Yochanan now in Eretz Yisrael says, we really only have four things that we insist on for Kos Shel Bracha, namely, Hadacha Shtifa Chayu Mali. We only insist on washing it, and it be Chay, and it be Mali. So the Gemara is going to clarify, yeah, really, a lot of these things. But let's see. So those are, and actually these are the things that are considered to be lahalacha, required, necessary for Kol Shel Bracha also. Let's see what they are. Tana, hadachas mi b'fnim, ushtifas mi b'chutz. So when it says that you have to wash out the kos, it means inside and outside. So that's halacha. You have to wash out the kos inside and outside. The poskim say, as much as that is actually mandatory and required, but the context of it is only when it's used. In other words, if you were drinking from this kos, and now you're ready to bench with this kos, you have to wash it out before you use it for Kos Shel Bracha. But if you just take out a new kos, you make kiddush on it, for example, or something, then the poskim don't require the washing out of the kos. Some do it anyway, as like a heder mitzvah to wash the kos. But that's not this. This is talking about when the kos was like dirty, was used. And you just wash it out before you use it. That's all question when it comes to the Dalit kosos at the Seder, between kos to kos, whether you're required to wash it out in between the kosos. So some say that's proper.
The person who does it for heder, is that because of this?
Yeah, I think so. There's another possible source about mezigas hakos, about diluting the kos. So a little bit of water in the bottom of the kos. You'll see some people insist that have a little bit of water kind of collect on the bottom of the kos for meziga purposes. But so even though it's required, it's not required in our world unless it's like the Dalit kosos or something, where it might be improper to wash out the kos in between uses. What does it say over here? Inside and out. Yeah. Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaMevorach Al Kos Male. Rabbi Yochanan makes a statement that gives you a bracha, or he quotes from Sukkim HaBracha, that when you makbid to make sure that your kos is Male, Nosnim Lo Nachla Bli Mitzarim. They give you such blessings, inheritance without boundaries. Shenamar, Umale Birkas Hashem Yam Vidorum Yerasha. Like the pasuk says in Zosa Bracha, in the context of somebody's whose bracha was that? I don't know. That Male Birkas Hashem, if your bracha is Male, then Yam Vidorum Yerasha. Then you will inherit outside of all boundaries, all to the south and to the west. Yam is west and Dorum is south. Okay. You'll punch through all the way. So, without boundaries. And Rabbi Yossi Bar Mechanina, Amar Zochav and Ochal Shnei Olamim. Rabbi Yossi Bar Mechanina interprets the words Yam Bedarim Yerasha to imply even Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Okay, where do you get Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba from the Pasuk? What is that all about? So Tosis has a pshat over here. Some of the Mefarshim give a different pshat about the playing with the letters. Okay, in any case, so we're saying, okay, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan, of course, we understand, because he was the one who said that this is one of the four requirements, so Malay. So that's what we know. We know that you have to have a kos Malay on all kosher brachas. All kosher brachas Malay. How much is Malay? So some are fussy about all the way Malay, so much to the top that you need the surface tension to contain the liquid inside the kos over the top edge of the kos. You can't really keep it like that for too long, I imagine, but that's at least the concept. And others say, no, that's not at all what it is. That regular male just means male to the point where it looks like it's male. That's somewhat more subjective. In any case, so male. So you need to be male. Now the problem, the Gemara is going to raise a whole problem with male, because it seems to be against another one of the requirements. Let's see. Itur. One of the 10 things is itur. Now remember, Rabbi Yochanan did away with a lot of these, but we're just going to go through some of what the 10 things are, because it happens to be that the Rishonim seem to have resurrected, the Gohanim and Rishonim resurrected a lot of these things as a heder mitzvah, not as required. So it says itur. Now the word itur means crown. So Rav Yehuda Me'atrehu B'Talmidim. So how did they crown the kosher bracha? Rabbi Yehuda would gather the Talmidim around the table, I guess. Okay, that's kind of a loose way of being mechaber the kos with itur. Rav Chista me'ater le'ben atli. Rav Chista would surround the kosher bracha with other little kosot. So that's kind of a thing that some people do nowadays. They have that kind of a thing. It's called itur. Natli your cups. Okay, so that's another. In other words, whatever, it's like a heder mitzvah to be ma'atir, the kosher bracha, with either people or things. Amar Rav Chanan ubechai, and now we have a whole girsa problem. If you see, there's a whole girsa thing going on over here. Rav Chanan says, well, what's chai? The requirement of chai, which means undiluted. So they used to have this strong wine. It's a little unclear to me exactly what was going on there, but they used to think that the regular wine straight from the grapes and fermented and from the casks was too strong and not palatable even. So they would dilute it, and the dilution ratio was tremendous. It was a ton of water. They would pour in more water than wine. It was a lot of water, very diluted. And that would be the way they would drink the wine. And they would treat the regular wine straight from the casks as being not potable. So that's not what we experience at all. So it was just funny. I mean, what the reality was back then, very hard to know exactly. Very hard to know.
But what do they do?
How do they pull that off? Yeah, what are we doing that's preventing that effect? I don't know what that is.
From manufactured, which changes the water down before we get it.
So maybe we don't know. Maybe we don't know what the secrets of wine making process are. Okay. Maybe. Yeah, they don't talk about that. So I don't know. And it can't be that it's more alcoholic and that's what's making it. It just can't be. So I don't know what it is. Anyway, whatever was going on, that was their life. So if it was undiluted, it's not really potable. But if you remember, one of the 10 things, and actually one of the 4 that survives Rabbi Yochanan's cut, was that it has to be chai. So that means that it has to be the undiluted wine. So how are you pulling that off? How are you making the bracha on undiluted wine, but you're going to have to be mosaic, you're going to have to dilute the wine, but then how's it going to be mole? That's the problem. So Rav Sheshes ube birchas ha'aretz. So the way they take this to mean it is, they take this to mean that it has to be like undiluted for the first bracha of benching. And then when you get about to start the second bracha, the bracha over how wonderful Eretz Yisrael is, so then you dilute the wine and you make the wine yummy again. Or make the wine yummy at that point. So there's all kinds of problems with this. But anyway, it looks like, see, if you look, there's a Tosfos in Chulin that they all point to, that the Rishonim on our daf like, which is, okay, then you can't put, then it's not chai. So what? Make up your mind. How can you have chai and how can you have malay? It's one or the other. So the way they describe it is that,
to it when it's full, then you're overflowing the cup.
Yeah. It can't be full of undiluted wine.
The water.
And if it's not diluted, then it's not full. It's like a little bit of wine at the bottom. So the way they describe it, this is the way they describe it. It doesn't apply to us because in our world, we don't dilute any wine. So we don't have this problem. So for us, chai is just the wine that we get right out of the bottle is chai already. So we just take it mali and chai. We don't do anything between the first and second bracha. So we don't have this whole practice. But that's what they used to do, apparently. So they would have it full, like three quarters of the way. So it was partially diluted wine. It's partially diluted, but it's too strong as is. It wouldn't really be as good as it would otherwise be. And then you top it off between bracha one and bracha two. All right. Ituf. Ituf means that it would be draped or wrapped. So Rav Papa me'atef v'yasiv. Rav Papa would himself put on his cloak and sit there and bench alakos with it. And Ravasi Parasudra al Reshe. Ravasi would put his turban, whatever, on his head. So these are two interesting things. Draping, putting on your jacket, and putting on your hat. Happens to be that these did not survive the Rabbi Yochanan cut, so these are not required. So you're not required to do these things when you bench alakos, or when you say any other thing alakos, but that it's treated as a kind of a heder mitzvah, in a certain sense. And so, but on the other hand, some Rishonim actually say, well, of all the different hidurim that of the original 10 that survived, these two did not survive. But on the other hand, here we're seeing Amoraim actually had this practice, so it must be that this was on their pious chumrah that they had on their own, but not necessarily intended for everybody to do, to follow in their footsteps. On the other hand, by the time you get to the Mishnah Brura then, it's turned into such an important thing that it's even no longer about the coast. So now it's just about the benching. So even if you're not benching on the coast, the Mishnah Berurah thinks that the practice in his place was that you would always make sure to put on a jacket and a hat, assuming that's called kavod, to wear a jacket and a hat, for the benching, even if you're benching just by yourself. So you see a lot of people are makbid about this. But anyway, this is not really required. Note lo b'shtei yadav, you take the coast in two hands. Amar Rabbi Chinen bar Papa, my cross, Yerichem Kodesh, Yivarchu Es Hashem. Yedeichem Kodesh, you should have your two hands involved in holding the kos, and say the bracha Baruch Hu Hashem. Okay, you see some people makbid about this also. Pick up the kos with two hands, or receive the kos with two hands. The nosna liyamin, and you put it in your right hand. In your right hand. So what's the whole mile of your right hand? Obviously that's more kavod, to put in your right hand. The question is about lefties. Does lefty have it in the right hand or the left hand? Shulchan Aruch quotes that lefties hold the kos in their left hand. Sometimes you have, a suffix about right or left, so you might imagine that you should be machmir if you're a lefty. And the yotze call ashitos and hold it with both hands. But it can't work in this case, because the next line, the Gamar Rab Chia Baraba Amar Rab Yochanan Rishonim Shalu Smol Maushet Tzayei Eliyamin. Rabbi Yochanan said that the Rishonim left it as they were unclear. They themselves were uncertain about whether your other hand can support the kos to help out your right hand. And they left it unanswered. Now, interestingly, this is what the Rishonim say. Tosfos right away says, hey, what's Rabbi Yochanan doing having an opinion about this? Since Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that this is not required. So that's what resurrects a lot of these other things, is because you see that even though it's not required, but this is considered to be like a Hidur mitzvah, anyway, to observe all these other chumras of the coast. Anyway, so Amarav Ashi, Hoel Harishonim Boyelahu Velo Ifshit Lahu, Rav Ashi makes the comment that, well, since Rabbi Yochanan reported that the Rishonim were themselves uncertain about whether you could support the kos with your other hand, anan avid l'chumra, you would have expected him to say, and since anyway the whole Medubar is probably not the Raisa, it's anyway only like a chumra, a minig, or a hider mitzvah or something, so why should you be machmir on this misafik? But he doesn't say that. He says that we go l'chumra misafik. Therefore what? Therefore, you don't have your other hand helping out, which is what prevents the possibility of being, for lefties, holding both hands, because you have to have only one and not supported by the other hand. The poskim do say, however, that if it's difficult, what could be difficult about it? Well, either you have very large kos, or it's like, this is the way they describe, or it's like Hanukkah. You have a long Alanisim to say, and it's going to take a long time. And so if you want, you could have your other hand support your arm. Maybe that'll be enough support. Or really, b'shas ha'dechak, obviously, you can dispense with this whole chumra altogether and have your other hands together. It's only a chumra. Anyway, magbiya min karka tefach. You pick up the thing, a tefach, over the karka, over the ground. Obviously, we don't have it in the ground in the first place, so it would be over the table. So you pick up the wine, a tefach, off the table. This is a thing that, also, they quote, this is the proper thing, is hold the wine, pick up the wine, a tefach. People are not always makbid about that. They just hold it like a centimeter off the table. But that's not what they recommend. They recommend the tefach. And Amar Rabacha Barchina Maikra, Kosi Shuos Esa, Ubeshem Hashem Ekra. Concept is, you Esa, you carry, you lift it up. So people can see is the way they describe it. The nosen ain't a bow. And you keep your eyes on the coast. I don't know if it means you have to keep your eyes the whole time on the coast. I don't know. So it shouldn't be masiach das from the coast. Not sure exactly what the point is, but that's what it says. And you pass the coast to your wife. Bimatana. Obviously matana. So the Rashi makes it seem as if it's like derech kavod. Why? So that the bracha should apply to your wife, and therefore your wife should have a bracha. That the bracha should go to the wife.
At what point do you pass it to the wife?
After you drink, I guess?
Well, this Gemara makes it seem as if you're not passing it to your wife instead of you drinking it, but you can't tell. But presumably, after you've drunk, you pass the wine. That's like part of the routine. So part of the routine is that you pass the kos itself. The Shulchan Aruch quotes from Yishonim and Psachim a whole question of what's the proper way to pass the wine around the table, because the Gemara has this issue called kos pagum, that you shouldn't be saying the bracha on a kos pagum, and possibly even shouldn't drink from a kos pagum. So if you're not supposed to drink from a kos pagum, so what do you do? How do you avoid drinking from a kos pagum? So that's why you have to see. Everybody has their own practices around the table, around their own homes. The Mishnah Berurah quotes this concept that the kos itself can always be passed around and drunk from without any hesitation. I mean, other than germs, but if you don't care about that, then no hesitation as far as this kpeda bet kos pagum. But if it's going to pour from this kos into a different kos, so then that should be done before the first drinker drinks. Or you should top it off a little bit more. You should put a little bit more of the fresh wine or grape juice into the kos before pouring it out. But if you're going to be, this kos itself is always drinkable. So this kos itself you would pass to your wife. But everybody else, you would either want to pour that off either in advance or you would pour a little bit more into it before pouring it off. Any case, you want to make sure your wife gets some. And the Gemara tells the following story, humorous somewhat story. Ula is one of those Amoraim. He would travel from Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes Ula is in Israel. Sometimes he's in Bavel. So it says Ikla lebei Rav Nachman in Bavel. Ula visits Rav Nachman's home. He was an honored guest, Ula, and he's at Rav Nachman's home. Karech Rifta. So he, said the Hamotzi, Baruch Birchas Mizona, and he's the one who also said the benching. Yohav Leikasa de Birchas El Rav Nachman. So he passes the coast to Rav Nachman, the coast shall bracha to Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to him, Lishadar Mar Kasa de Birchas El Yalta. You better send the coast to my wife. Yalta is the name of his wife. You better send the coast to my wife, Yalta.
Is this the only time that we have
Well, this is not the only time we hear about Yalta, for one thing. So she makes appearances in other places. But I don't know. I don't know about other names of other Amoraim.
I hear a lot, but I don't remember ever hearing the woman's name mentioned.
That's a good point. Amarle. So Ula, pushes back. And he says to Rav Nachman, Hachi Amar Rav Yochanan. You don't know this because you don't know Rabbi Yochanan, but I know Rabbi Yochanan. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, "We don't care. Ain pri bitna shel isha misbareich el mi pri bitna shel ish." There's no point to a bracha for the wife because her whatever bracha she's going to get is going to come from the husband. Shenamar ubeirach pri bitna necha, as the pasuk says in the ubeirach pri bitna necha ufriad masacha. Beirach privit necha, you'll have a bracha and your children. Privit nalo ne'emar, doesn't say your children. Ela privit necha. Even though the expression is a little funny. Those children are not from your beten, in that sense, they're from her beten. But in a certain sense, we're also considering it like children of your beten also. So, and the fact that the emphasis is on you, and therefore, he tells Rav Nachman back, don't bother, because as long as you got the kos, she doesn't need it. Tani and Amiyachi, Rav Nassan Omer, and not only that, there's also Braisa, confirms the same attitude. Rav Nassan Omer, Minayin, Shein, Privit, Nashalish, Misbarech, Elmir, Privit, Nashalish. Shenemar, Peirach, Privit, Nacha, Priyad, Bitna, Lo, Namra, La, Privit, Nacha. Adahachi, while this was all going on, Shama Yalta. So Yalta, now here's what's going on. She gets the gist that they're not passing her the coast. So Kama Bezihara, so she stands up in a rage. They also lebei chamra, and she goes down to the wine cellar. The tavra dalid meyadani chamra, and she smashes all the wine barrels. Amar le Rav Nachman, nishader mar kasa achrina. Maybe you should send her a kos shel bracha again. Shalach la kol hay navga de birkasa hi. So they sent her, they gave her a kos, and they said, the whole barrel is all the kos shel bracha. Take this as the kos shel bracha. This is good enough. Shalchalei, so she sends back to him what essentially amounts to, insulting Ula with, what amounts to something that sounds like, when you have these kind of... guys like him, don't expect any good information to come from them. Mima hadure mili, from guys who travel around, like from traveling salesmen, all you get is mili. All you get is a bunch of gossip or a bunch of nonsense. Emis smartute kalimi. And from, you know, old used clothes, all you get is lice. So what exactly was the message? It was like, you know, don't listen to the nonsense from Ula. Ula is just gonna whatever. Anyway, she wasn't happy with the way. Some people try to soften the actual event on the grounds that maybe even if she was justified in being angry, it doesn't necessarily mean that you ought to be smashing everything. And so some say no, it just means she went down to the wine cellar to lock it because it was hers. Because she was Isha Chashuva, and so she slams the door, and slamming the door, and it kind of inadvertently smashes all of the wine that's in there, or whatever. Okay, I'm not sure what you're gaining. Well, anyway, the story stands as try to do these kinds of things that are nice gestures, even if you can argue why it's not necessary.
Don't upset your wife.
That's the lesson. Amar Ravasi, Emesichin al Kosel Bracha. Vasi says you can't talk once you're starting to bench once you already have the kosher bracha in position or lifted up. No more talking. Amar Ravasi ein mevarchim al kosher puranis. So Ravasi says you can't say the bracha on a coast of shel puranus, right on the coast of puranus. Puranus means punishment or calamity. My coast shel puranus. What is that? Rav Nachman Yitzchak Kos Sheni. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says that's the second coast. That's the second coast. It refers specifically to the principle that they had. They had a superstition called Zugos. Zugos was whenever things would happen in pairs, the even numbered occurrence would bring about all kinds of calamity. This happened to have been one of those superstitions that was, even at the time, was not universal. And then over the years, it kind of fell away. But nevertheless, that's the concept over here. Tanya Nam Yachi, Ashosa Bekiflayim Lo Yivarech. Mishim Shanem Mar Hikon Likrasel Lekach Yisrael V'haylo Miskan. Like the Bryce also says, you know, don't, if you're drinking two cups, that's got to make trouble. Don't be the one to say the bracha. And then the commentaries just point out, obviously, this is only if you care about it, because the Gemara Psachim says that if you don't care about this particular superstition, then there's nothing to worry about. So it doesn't apply to us. So we don't even know what this is. Amar Rebbe Vov, Yamar Lebe Mesni Satana, Ha'ochel Mahalech. This is an interesting halacha. Rebbe Vov says, it quotes from the Braisa, if you're walking while eating, Ha'ochel Mahalech, Mevarech Me'umad, you have to stop when you bench. Kishahu ochel me'umad, but if you're, let's say, standing while eating, mevarach miyushav. So then when you come to bench, you need to sit down. Kishahu me'seveich ve'ochel, and if you're reclining while eating, yoshev mevarach. You need to sit up straight and say the bracha. The hilchasa, and the Gemara Paskins, the psak is, bekulhu, in all cases, well, however you happen to have been eating while eating, but when you're ready to bench, Yoshev umevarech. You need to be sitting down and benching. So that happens to be the way we hold. You have to sit and bench. And there's a question about which brachos achronos require that type of kavod. So, you know, maybe for alamichya also. I'll spend a few minutes just running through maybe the next mishnah we might be able to pull off here. There's a lot of halachos in this next mishnah, so let's move fast. Most of these halachos that are in this mishnah over here are going to be explained in the Gemara, so we don't have to really explain much. Here are things that are as a machlokas between Beisham and Beisila regarding the etiquette of a Seuda or some of the halachos of the Seuda. Let's say when it's a matter of Kiddush, so we say two brachas over Kiddush. You say the bracha Mekadesh HaShabbos, and we say Bar Pri HaGafen. What order do we do? We're so familiar with the order of Bar Pri HaGafen first and then Kiddush that we don't even realize that you could theoretically do it the other direction, the other order. So Beis Shammai held, you first say the Mekadesh HaShabbos, and then you say Bar Pri HaGafen and drink. We're so used to saying Bar Pri HaGafen before every bracha of that, you know, every special bracha with the one exception of benching. So that's the only time, and that's our practice, is you always say Bar Pri HaGafen first, and then you accept benching, where you always say Bar Pri HaGafen after the benching. But this is a machlokas b'sham b'yisrael. B'yisrael omrim, mevarach ala yayin, v'yachach mevarach ala yom. B'sham ayomrim, notlim liyadayim, v'yachach not mozgim as a kos. B'sham I say, you first wash until as yadayim, and then you pour the kos to drink the bar priya gafen. B'yisrael omrim, mozgim as a kos, v'yachach notlim liyadayim. So this is you know our practice. A lot of these halachos are going to be tumah v'tahara related, so that's so important for in our world. But anyway, so we have that practice. Although as you know, like Yekis will first wash the tilos yadayim before kiddush. Mm-hmm. So it looks like they're following a Beishamai view about this, but there's other stuff going on. Beishamai yomrim mekaneach yadav b'mapa umenicha ala shulchan beishel alomrim ala keses. Another machlokas. When you wash until as yadayim and you have your towel, and that's your personal towel, you're going to use also for the meal. Where do you keep the napkin? Is the question. Do you keep the napkin on the table, or do you keep the napkin on the chair next to you? Beis Shammai Omrim. So Beis Shammai said, you know, you can put it on the shulchan. Beis Hillel said, don't leave the napkin on the table. Put it on the side. Beis Shammai Omrim. Chabdin mesabayis. I say, after you finish eating and the floor is all dirty with stuff, with crumbs and whatever, so I say, first sweep the floor before you wash until it's yadayim for mayim achronim, and Beis Hillel omrim, first wash mayim achronim, notlim liyadayim, v'yachar kach mechabdin es habayis, and then sweep the floor. Okay, it's going to be the assumption is that you're sweeping the floor. That's kind of interesting. Anyway, b'shama yomrim ner umazon ubesamim vehavdala. The context here is, and you see on the side here, this comes up in Psachim Kuf Gimel. That's the main source of this whole. There's a lot of discussion about it over there, which is if let's say you only have one kos, and let's say we're assuming that you always have to bench ala kos. So since you have to always bench ala kos, and you're eating shalosh shudis, and you anticipate you're going to have a problem because I'm going to need this one kos. I only have one kos. I'm going to need this kos to bench my shalosh shudis, but I also need this kos for Avdala tonight. How do I pull off all of my requirements of bracha ala kos? So, Beis Shammai Omrim, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to say, Ner umazon ubisamim vehavdala. I say my Barim Mori Ha'ish, and then my benching, and then besamim, and then I say Havdala. And it doesn't say where in all of this I say the bar priya gafen. Beis Hillel omrim ne'er ubesamim umazon vehavdala. Beis Hillel say, well, you say the bracha on the ne'er first, and then the besamim second, and mazon third, and havdala fourth. And again, it doesn't say where the yayin is going to go. Interestingly, obviously, none of our practice doesn't follow any of these. So the Gemara is going to have to present other alternative configurations and permutations. Beis Shammai omrim shebara maor ha'esh, Beis Hillel omrim borei maorei ha'esh. Machlokes Beis Shammai Hillel about what's the nusach of the bracha bar maor ha'esh, and we know we follow Beis Hillel on that. The ein mevarchem al lo al haner v'lo al besamim shel akum v'lo al ner v'lo besamim shel mesim v'lo al ner v'lo besamim shel avodah zara. So it says here that when you're saying the bracha on the ner and on the besamim, you have three rules. It says not to use the ner or besamim of a goy, or of the mesim, or of a cadaver. They obviously needed the besamim for the ner for the cadaver, or the ner of the mace. What is that? The ner of the mace. So that would actually be, you know, in our world, that actually means like a yahrzeit or yisker candle. You can't use that for bar mitzvah eish. Below al haner al besamim shel avodah zara. You can't use also an air besamim for avodah zara. Some of it's going to be explained more in the Gemara. The end of varchem al haner ad sheyayosu li'oro. And you can't say a bracha on the ner until the literally it says until you get hanah from the light. Until you get hanah from the light. The Gemara is going to soften that a little at that point, but it's an interesting halacha, and that's possibly, you know, what the concept is in the previous one, which is you have to be nehane from the or, and it has to be a light that's for that purpose. Anyway, misha achal v'shachach v'lo bireich, if a person ate and forgot and didn't say the bracha, b'yashami amrim yachzor l'mkomo v'yivarech. Now, this is not what we said earlier about bracha rishon. This is the bracha achron. So you forgot the bench. and you walked away. So Beisham Amrim Yachzor Lam Kum Ovi Yivarech. Beisil Amrim Yivarech Memakom Shenizkar. Beisham I say you have to go back to your original spot to bench. Beisil say you can bench wherever you remember. The Ad Basayim Yivarech. How much time do you have to say a bracha achrona to bench? Ad Kadesh Yisakel Hamazon Shebimeyav. You have as much time as it would take for your food to be digested inside your stomach, which means until you begin to be hungry again. That's the way they say this, until you get to be hungry again. So this is very variable. Depends how much food you ate. If you ate a lot of food, it could take hours. So that's what it says. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you ate a lot of food, it takes you have hours before you lose your chance to bench. But if you only ate a little, so then they give you the 72-minute minimum. It'll take at least 72 minutes before the food effects of the food are gone. Balahem yayin achar amazon im einsham ela oso hakos. If let's say you get some wine after the meal, so you haven't yet set a bar for your guffin yet on any of the wine, b'shamay omrim mevarach ala yayin b'achach mevarach ala amazon. B'shamay say the bar for your guffin and then you use the kos shel birchas amazon. B'yisrael omrim mevarach ala amazon b'achach mevarach ala yayin. That's what we do. You bench, and then you say Baruch Yagafen at the after benching. The Onim Amein Achar Yisrael Hamivareich. The Ein Onim Amein Achar Kusi Hamivareich. The rule is that if you hear the end of a bracha, then you can respond to Amein if the one saying the bracha is a Yisrael. But if it's a Kusi saying the bracha, then you can't say Amein Ad Sheishma Kol Bracha Kula, unless you hear the entire bracha and you hear that it's a genuine and authentic bracha. And then you can respond the main to it. Otherwise, you don't know what the earlier part of the bracha was, and therefore you don't know whether that's a bracha you ought to respond with an amen for. All right, maybe we'll stop here.